Suddenly everyone's going quiet. I wonder why that is. Hi, welcome. Welcome to round two. Good morning, freedom lovers. Pia, can you check that the noisy people are actually... A special message from Pia. Okay, thanks. Love letters, you know. It's very cute. Interesting timing, I have to say, but yeah. Firstly, I want to say thank you very much to our Miniconf organizers. Are you in the crowd, or are you all stressing about your Miniconfs today? Stand up, Miniconf dudes. It was wonderful and heartwarming to hear the cries of agony when we posted the Miniconf schedules all up on the one program page, and everyone was like, shit, there's like, you know, 40% more awesome crap at LCA. We try to make it hard. And the Miniconf guys have made it even harder, which is wonderful. Thank you so much. On that note, Miniconf organizers, please go and see Benno at the Red Joe desk after this. I don't think they're connected, but you never know. Weird announcement. Please don't use the vending machines, especially the vending machines that contain milk products. apparently, we've turned up in university break, and university break doesn't involve removing out-of-date products from vending machines. Apparently, you can't kill students in summer. But you guys are fair game. So, yeah, only go for products that don't have a use-by date. Apparently there's a Lego vending machine here somewhere as well. Oh, actually, has everyone seen the robot vending machine, the robot shop down the front? Yes. It's almost as good as seeing the Harbour Bridge. The Harbour Bridge, yeah, well. T-shirts and hats. Unfortunately, we will not be getting more t-shirts and hats in sensible sizes or correctly printed hats. So I'm very sorry about that, but yeah, we can't do anything about that at this stage. However, there is some awesome swag at the front desk, and tonight there will be more swag as well from our various sponsors. So go and grab your Intel t-shirt at the front desk, and tonight there will be some Google swag at the Google party. No food and drink in theaters. That also means coffee in the entrance to Matthew's B. But even if you happen to spill it before the theater, if that's your strategy for not spilling it in the theater, dodge food in the theaters, please. Otherwise, we'll get in trouble. Also, watch out for power and network. Apparently, some network cables have been disconnected and people connecting into the wired network in the theaters, hoping that perhaps they would get network access, but making the rest of the room go, where's network gone? Same happens with power. Please make sure you're unplugging useless stuff. Morning and afternoon teas. Please have morning and afternoon tea at morning and afternoon tea. Our caterers have a wide open space in which they have to serve, and they're starting to get a little bit snarky with people having morning and afternoon tea at all sorts of times that don't actually involve morning tea and afternoon tea. If you haven't got your badge yet, all of the badges are ready to rock up at the front desk, and I believe that might actually include grey badges for speakers as well. Our distro suites are all rolled out. They all have the appropriate signage. Don't be embarrassed if someone comes up to you and says, dude, I didn't know you used Fedora. The Gen 2 flat packs were also out there. One was built successfully yesterday, which we thought was pretty impressive. It turns out they're rocking chairs because, you know, everyone's like, oh, Gen 2 rocks, man. We were considering making it somewhat more complicated and not including an Allen key, so that you'd go and have to build your compiler yourself. But no, we weren't that harsh. They actually just clicked together. Please drink water. All of the water has been delivered. There is a water cooler in the east and west wings of the pavilions and one up at the regio desk. There are lots of cups. Drink lots and lots of water. You're welcome to use water bottles with those things. We do have quite a lot of water. Don't go nuts, but stay healthy. Network coverage. Network coverage has been pretty good. It's spotty in some theaters. That's been fixed today. The network has been solid as a rock, and those of you who have tried to download large things have realized that ARNET really, really rocks. So colleges, that's the next bit of status. International House Courtyard is now lit up. New college has apparently wireless access in random areas. No. We actually have lit up coverage. Yes, wander around New College and try and find it. I don't know why that's random at the moment, but it is. Shalom will be going up today, but the Shalom ensuite people will have to migrate towards other Shalom people to get Wi-Fi, unfortunately, for the moment. But yes, the network's been really, really rocking. Today we have Chris Lizard this morning. We have rocking MiniConf again. 5:30, Linux Australia AGM. Please go to that if you're a member or want to be a member or want to find out who's been elected to the committee this year. And then we have a conference party at 7 p.m. That's it from me. So again, enjoy your LinuxConf AU. It's round two people. Have fun, fight, and I have to introduce Chris Blizzard now. Right here. Come on up.
Remember?
Okay.
So I was thinking, you know, I've been to a lot of keynotes. Some of them are interesting. I'm more likely to give one of the boring ones, so I thought, you know, we'd try and get a little audience participation interested, and I wanted to give a counterexample of the kinds of things I see. So how many Americans do we have in the audience? Most of you guys know what C-SPAN is, right? C-SPAN? Do you have C-SPAN as well? No, you don't, but you know what it is. So just for people who don't know, C-SPAN is this free cable channel that exists in most of the United States. It shows a lot of boring book interviews and tends to show a lot of the United States Congress in session, which involves a lot of this. A bunch of guys sitting behind a desk, mostly old white guys, talking to old white guys, sometimes not, but one of the great examples is that you'll see somebody down on the floor of the Senate having a conversation. They're reading off a prepared statement. It's not particularly interesting, and then they'll pan out to the audience, and there's no one there. No one at all. So, yes, exactly. Well, we have an audience. They're captive. They don't have scandals to go participate in. So I thought it might be interesting, this show. I didn't want to have a sort of a C-SPAN experience. Instead, I really like these guys. This is the British House of Parliament, which C-SPAN also shows to their credit. But, you know, the great thing about British House of Parliament is, you know, the Prime Minister has to stand there and defend his strategy and defend his policies, and the audience is sort of un-British-like, I think. Pretty obnoxious, right? They make a lot of noise. So I was going to try and get you guys to sort of participate and say, let's get a little positive and negative noise. And you had some specific Australian things that you thought might bring some positive and negative reactions.
Right, so things that might be mentioned in British Parliament, imagine you're there right now, that have some reflection on Australia, because, you know, most of us here are Australian, apart from New Zealand. And the Melbourneites. So Chris wanted me to come up with stuff that would get a response from you guys, as perhaps the response would be in there. So I tried to do a Tony Blair voice. It's like got that swaggering rock star gay thing going on. today, I'd like to welcome a very special friend of mine from south of the equator, Prime Minister John Howard.
That's pretty good. So let's get a positive one too.
Okay. The positive one is today in the chamber we are going to be discussing an issue that's been discussed in Australia for a number of years now, but we're going to do something about it instead of them stuffing around for years and years. We're going to talk about Australia becoming a republic.
That's pretty good.
All right.
We'll let it slide. Because we're running out of time. You'll have plenty of opportunity. Yeah, you can leave. Go do some stuff that's useful. All right. So another thing I noticed, I was giving Watson some talks. I watch a lot of people give presentations about the past, right? They talk about project status, what they've done, kinds of things. I kind of want to talk about something that's pretty difficult. I want to try and talk about the future. And that's really difficult, I think, for a lot of people. It's certainly difficult for me. You know, I'm hoping you guys will give me some positives, some negatives. I think you suck. I think you rule. That'd be great. And sort of on the ideas as well. That's right, getting started early. So one of the things I really want to talk about is sort of relevance, right? What does it mean to be relevant? What does it mean for us as a community to be relevant? You know, I was in the Debian MiniConf yesterday, and listening, I think BDL said that they think that Linux ships on 26% of their servers. Is BDL here? Where are you? It's 26% or so, roughly? You're just guessing. You don't know how many pirated copy of Windows those actually refer to, but that's a pretty good number, right? That means that roughly a quarter of HP shipments contain software that we care about, fits within our value system, and generally improves the lives of people out there. But that's really in, you know, the back of the office. You're never going to see that in the real world. If I say to a lot of normal people, you know, people that aren't involved with computers on a day-to-day basis, you know, oh, I work with Linux, and they might go, oh, I kind of know what that is. Or, you know, I work with free software. They're like, you mean software I don't have to pay for? I'd love to be able to talk to people about the kinds of things that they can relate to, and the kinds of, and make sure that they're the things that we have created, and the fact that what we're really doing is taking our value system, the things that we really care about, transparency, freedom, those kinds of things, and making sure that they are getting that experience too, and they understand the benefit that we have experienced on a day-to-day basis. I think that's really important. And I want to try and talk about sort of some of the things I've had the opportunity to be involved with. Again, talking about the past, so I'm a total hypocrite. And the kinds of things we've learned about how we want to make things that are valuable for normal people. So really I think that the thing that you have to worry about is making a good product. And notice I didn't say project, I said product, right? Something that normal people can consume. The best products are the things that really change the way that we live, right? They're not things that are incremental. The best products are things like one of the good examples I have, I think, is a cell phone in an abstract sense is a pretty good example of the kind of thing that does change the way we live. We can get phone calls anywhere we want. We can make a call. I think it's changed the way that people act. It's changed the way that people lead their lives. But that's the kind of thing that we need to be focused on. How can we take the things that we have and enable people to change the way that they live, right, along with the value system that we have? So let's talk about some quick examples. A little moment for audience participation. Boo. You don't like the iPhone? Nah, that's okay. I'm indifferent to it, but that's beside the point. I want to play a game. It's sort of, I hate to use the I word, but let's play, figure out what the innovation is. So what makes the iPhone special? What's that? Steve? Steve does have, he does have that aura around him, that distortion field. Right? Oh, Steve made it. It's great. What's that? Okay, that's one way to put it. What else? Come on, there's got to be more. There's like a billion people in this audience. Profit is a side effect. A large screen, that's pretty good. Multi-touch, that's good. Exactly. It's art. That's what it comes down to. So, you know, they do have some interface changes. They got a big screen. They've got a touch thing. It is very pretty, right? You're going to show it to your friends, and they're going to go, ooh, can I have one? Not particularly interesting. It is probably going to be a joy to use. I haven't seen one, but if the demonstrations I've seen are anything to, you know, any example of what it's really going to be like, it'll be pretty interesting. But it doesn't change the way we live, right? It's still a cell phone. The only thing I've seen that's different is they actually got the carriers to allow them to download voicemail, something we should have done, been able to do years ago if they didn't want us to burn minutes, right? I'm amazed they managed to do that. But once again, it's not a particularly great product, but it is a piece of art, which is probably an important thing that we need to worry about. So let's talk about Firefox. All right, I got some lovers, some haters. That's good. It means we're getting the right thing. Good sigma there. So what do people think? There are a lot of people out there who absolutely love Firefox. What do you think makes it a good product? Extensions? That's pretty good. That has more to do with stickiness, like making people stick with it. But standards? Okay. Tabs? That's good. What? Yeah, it does annoy Microsoft, right? It's not Microsoft, and I think that should not be discounted. People dislike Microsoft more than they love Firefox, I suspect. It is cross-platform, although that's a means to an end, too. The pop-up blocker is probably the big one, I think. So it is a pleasant interface, right? It's not awful. It's not great either, but it certainly doesn't get in your way or annoy you. I would say it makes the web less annoying. Pop-ups, tabs, extensions, fix a lot of things. And there's another important thing, too, that is more organizational, but it comes up to the product, is it always respects the user. It tries to make sure that, you know, you can use whatever search engine you want. You can use the extensions you want. It's something subtle, and it's part of the branding, and I think we'll see more of that in the future. But it's an important function, I think, of Firefox. But if I had to use the capital I innovation word, you know, I worked on this for 8 years of my life or something. But it's interesting to think about it. So let's talk about this. This is another project that I'm doing right now. Woo! People like it. So what do you think the I innovation word is here? What is the difference? Sorry? It's ethical? Is that what you said? It is ethical, I think, yes. Yes. It is cute and shiny. What's that? Yes, exactly. So it annoys Intel too, which is pretty funny. This is the only innovation that I see in this product, right? It's laptops for poor kids in developing nations. There's some technical stuff, which I'll actually jump into later just because I think it's sort of interesting to this crowd. But that's the innovation, and I think that is the one thing that makes this project interesting. Right? Cost, display. What's that? It could be, but this is where we're focused. Right? It'd be very tempting to sort of say, oh, those guys can afford another $50. We'll give them more memory or something. But yeah, we're very focused on that. So that's real innovation there. And I want to talk for a second just about the idea of moving the needle. Right? This is one of the phrases we use inside of Firefox. It's like, how can we move the needle? How can we find more users? How can we improve their experience in a way that allows us to be able to drive the web forward in an open way? Right? The Mozilla Foundation, our primary goal is to make sure that the internet is available and open to anyone who wants to use it, and that remains true into the future, right? We happen to produce Firefox because that's what we care about. We care about, you know, you could call it open standards, but I think that it's more about participation. But how do we find those market share pieces? How do we find those features? How do we design something that's useful for normal people? I can walk into almost any workplace these days and find Firefox on a desktop, which is a huge accomplishment. because it's still free software, right? Maybe it's not Linux, and maybe it's not pure all the way to the core, right? Because it runs on top of Windows and it runs on top of OS X, but it's changing people's lives in a real way. So how do we move that needle? So I'll go into sort of the Firefox example and try and give you an idea of sort of how we think about the issue, how we think about it. I think early on we discovered that it's really hard to move the web from the back end, right? You can only create services that are as good as the client products that are out there. If Microsoft has 97% market share of the experience that people have on their desktops when they're browsing the web, you can't do anything, right? Because you need to keep the client moving as well. So that was one of our sort of first discoveries, right? And I think people in here should be aware of that, that no matter how good the server technology you have is, it's not going to affect a lot of what sort of the web experience is. So I think realistically, Firefox is actually driving it from the front end, which is that if we can go out and I can say, you know, we have roughly 25% market share in places like Germany and a lot of Europe, which is pretty big. That's 1 in 4. It's a huge number. Everybody in here should be pretty proud of that, I think. And 14% in the U.S. and you know, some places it's really high. It's really strange. But we have the ability to drive it from the front end. Sorry, I'm about to lose power here. It's going to go really bad. Oh, I heard it. So we're really out there front. So what can we learn from these guys? Our first thing was to go direct, right? We don't expect other people to distribute our software for us. We just, I remember sitting in a staff meeting and just saying, you know what, we need to build an end user product. For a long time, the Mozilla project fed other things, right? We fed Netscape. Who uses Netscape anymore? Anybody? No? What's that? They still certify against Netscape. They also use OS 2. So I'm not sure if that's a great example. But this is our big thing. It's like, let's start building end user products. Let's start building products that normal people would care about and really improve their experience. No middlemen, no distributors, no nothing. Just build great stuff. And we really made sure that we stuck to our values. I think it's an important thing to realize we didn't compromise on, you know, freedom of software. We didn't compromise on, you know, whether or not we'd do a big deal with somebody just because it would get us a lot of money and really impair the experience that people have. Firefox is still pretty clean, and they get enough money to be able to fund development, which is pretty important, right? We think that people should be able to choose their own search engines. It's not like IE, which is going to push everybody at MSN. That's been an important thing for us, and we have the ability to say, you know what, if somebody comes to us and says, offers us a dump truck full of money, we're not going to change the experience just because that's an attractive option. So sticking to our values is an important part of that. Another thing that's really important is design. It's a very conscious effort. It's not just having an artist and making it a pretty GUI. Right? Design is about experiences. It is about how you go from one place to another. It's about creating something that's just a great experience to use, I guess is a good way to put it. And the second thing is know exactly what you're doing. You know, you have values, but you really want to have a mission, right? You know, keeping the internet open and free is a great mission, even if you're starting on a very small part. You need to understand exactly where you're going. And the last thing is sort of move in ways that others can't. I'll give you a great example. We launched Firefox 2 1 week before IE7. And we could tell based on press statements from Microsoft and our own download numbers that we were still getting downloaded and used twice as often as IE7, which is a pretty big number, right? How can you, I mean, we're able to compete asynchronously with Microsoft, and there's not a lot of places or companies that can actually do that. So that's a great example. So let me draw a little boo. Too many. This is the year, I swear to God. Right? So, you know, you have to ask the question, so how many years has this been the year of the Linux desktop? I really like mine, right? if I get suspended or Zoom to work properly and I get multimedia codecs, I'd be a really happy guy. I don't need much else. I'm actually one of those rare guys in this audience maybe that uses Nautilus on a day-to-day basis, and I love it. I love the applications that I have, and I like the experience. But, you know, you have to ask yourself, it's sort of like, is this relevant? Are we relevant? It's a tough question. You know, if we aren't able to move the needle, right, with the desktop, then how do we get our values and our interests out there? So I think the answer is actually yes, but, you know, it tends to show up in places where you don't expect, right? I don't think we're going to do a total Linux desktop right off the bat. You know, I think it's still growing, it's just very slowly, and maybe not as fast as the rest of the client market. But we're showing up in places like the 800, random cell phones, OLPC, we're going to move a few million units probably, and we're going to be able to do some things asynchronously that others can't. We're going to have an open protocol stack, we're going to have open applications, extensions, things that other operating system providers wouldn't tolerate because other people might innovate on top of them. My God. So I'm going to talk a little bit about one laptop per child because I think a lot of people here are probably interested in that. So yes? Yeah? Nobody wants coffee yet? No? You want to stick around? Okay. It's my very small icon. So, you know, one laptop per child is about kids in developing nations. This is a real example of a school that's in Nigeria, I believe, the kind of place that we want to be able to deploy laptops. That's just the way it looks. I didn't touch that. Sort of rough around the edges. I believe that this school has some power and no networking to speak of, clearly. This is an example of that same school. This is the school lunch program that increased attendance by about one-third, I believe. Right? You see the kids, they tend to show up. It's a good program. Some kids in that school. Really, it's about these guys. This is an example of the inventory book. They have some physical education equipment. So we want to be able to change that. We want to change the way that they work. So we have three specific innovations I think that are sort of interesting. The first is mesh networking, which means that every laptop is not just a client but also a router. This helps us deal at least in some part with the last mile problem, which is how do you, you know, stretch out laptops from one place to another without putting in tremendous amounts of expensive wireless infrastructure. You know, the laptop is always pictured with these little rabbit ears. The rabbit ears actually serve a purpose. They've got antennas in them and they really improve the range of the machine. Somebody in the audience actually doing testing in the Outback? Is it you? I don't think we've actually met. Did I see mail? It was like an ad hoc was 1.3 kilometers or something. That's a pretty big stretch. That's no special equipment, right? That's between two laptops. That's pretty good, right? So, we want these kids to be able to take things home. So the idea is the network actually starts to stretch towards home. From the schools themselves. Probably the access points in the schools, but you can get away with one if you're also using the same mesh networking protocols. So that's one big innovation. We help don't have to lay down a lot of expensive infrastructure to be able to deploy these things. The second one is power. So this is clearly from a CAD program. I've actually held it, so it is real. Human power works like a lawnmower. We generally pull on an average, we're hoping to pull about an average of 2 watts on these laptops. You can generate about 20, which means you can get about a 10-to-1 ratio of use to being able to power it. In a lot of the world, things are powered by a small army of people moving around and charging car batteries. Right? There's a real, you know, some people have the job, they carry a car battery from place to place. A car battery can power one of these laptops for a long time. Is David here? Where's David? Zoyton. He's probably out drinking last night. we were doing some napkin calculations, and we figured out that car battery could power these things for an inordinate amount of time. We were like, 4 months? That doesn't sound right. So we think we did some math wrong, but it should be a lot of time. And the last part is the display. This is Mary Lou Jepsen standing in Taiwan with one of the laptops, standing next to an IBM laptop in direct sunlight. Notice the difference? I think he built the IBM too, so he's probably looking a little nervous. That's from Quanta, one of our suppliers. But it does, it has a reflective screen, a black and white screen, which is a pretty big deal. In a lot of the world, kids learn outside. That was one of the real use cases that we had. So that's where we're doing a lot of innovation. I'm not going to go into a lot of depth here. I just wanted to give you an idea of sort of what the picture was of the kinds of things we're building. This happens to come from a mock-up, but if you see the real machine and you see the real interface, this is actually what it looks like. This is not a Linux desktop, but I will say that 95% of the stuff underneath happens to be based on the same technologies. Right? We're using GTK, we're using Cairo, we're using Linux, we're using Python, we're using all sorts of things. But you can remix it, and you can create new and interesting things for specific audiences at pretty low cost. Most of the time, people don't want to step outside their comfort zone, but we're trying to do that in one laptop per child. Maybe it'll be successful, maybe it won't. Right? Maybe we'll get into the field and we'll discover that it's terrible and we'll go back to something else. But at least we're experimenting, at least we're trying. If we want to have relevance in these markets and we want to make a difference in people's lives, we need to be able to step outside and be able to do those kinds of things. It's an example of what an application would look like, right? Chat on top, it's good. A journal, for example. Very different interface than what we're used to. So how do we get there? How do we actually make ourselves relevant? That's the question that I think we need to answer. So our big thing is find the clients that matter. I don't mean people are going to give you money for consulting. I mean things that are going to get into real people's hands. Talk about millions of units. Find those things. That's a really important piece. And we're actually set up quite well to do that, right? Because anybody can enter, right? Anybody can pick up Linux, and anybody can pick up the tool sets that we have and the tools we have and start using them without asking permission, which is different than pretty much every other software shop or operating system on the planet where you have to go through business development and you got to get licensing rights and figure out, you know, well, what do they want the experience to be? No, you don't have to do that. We can make it look like anything we want to. And we should encourage people to do that, and we encourage experimentation. This is something that I think a lot of programmers have a problem with, is finding good designers and learn to trust them. Right? The first one is actually harder than the second one, because anybody can say, you can trust me. Anybody. Even programmers that like to make comments about designs. But finding good designers is important. I've had the luck of working with some of them, right, for developing the UI for one laptop per child. And it was difficult, I know, for me to be able to say, take a step back and go, okay, let's try something different. Getting outside of that comfort zone took me a long time. But now it's quite nice. And remember, you're building it for someone else. You're not building it for yourself, right? It takes a unique sense of empathy to be able to say, you know what, I'm going to build this for somebody else instead of myself. I'm not going to worry about my 1024 CPU, which, yes. He's not here either. He's out drinking with David. He was saying that auto CD detection broke his 1024 CPU cluster. I wouldn't know that. But, you know, it was an interesting conversation to have because he said, well, I can always click a button if I put in a CD, right? And I don't have this problem. I was like, well, you know, I want something to happen when I put in a CD, so let's try and find a middle ground. But it was an interesting conversation to have. It's just a different perspective. So I think that those are the key things that you need to be able to make yourself relevant. Worry about design, build for other people, be open to new ideas, and, you know, really it's about lowering the barrier. Right? So that's what relevance is all about for me. And I think that I hope that it was useful for you. Talk about OLPC, talk about Firefox. Talk about some of the things I've had the good chance to be involved with, and be able to take it out into the real world and use it. Thank you very much.
ahead.
Where is it? Oh.
We're selling the governments, not the people. Oh, I'm sorry. He wants to know. He's asked the question every single person I run into asks me, which is, how can I buy one? If you succeed, I'm gonna buy Sealand, and I'm going to purchase laptops through Sealand. Can you buy 1 million units? What do you got in your pocket? We need a lot of volume to be able to ship low cost. So. Raising revenue for YouTube? That's right. That's why Google's involved, right? And just like, wow, we could add 100 million kids to people who use Google? Well, that's great. Seems like a good investment. Right? Well, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right, so that would be the one for two deal, I think we call it. So you buy two, get one. Right. We talked about that, and that'd be interesting for enthusiasts and people interested. But you know, if you look at the sales volume in the Western world, it would be for people like you. It actually wouldn't be for the kids because, let's say, you sold 50,000 units. That's not a lot when you're talking about wanting to deliver 1 million units for kids. Right. It's about moving the needle. I think in the end we may do it. I don't know. It's still open for discussion. But in terms of being able to get things out in the world and actually making a difference, we have our priorities pretty straight. We're going to go out in the developing world first. That's our first priority. So, yeah. So the question is about security. If you make more than $100 in a month, you know, the value of the laptop, what about the black market, what are you doing about security? The answer is, yeah, it's going to happen. And we are certainly concerned about it. We're talking about doing something sort of interesting in Nigeria where it has to check in with a school server, and if it doesn't, it disables itself, which makes me a little sad inside, because I know that's going to go wrong for somebody sometime. The server dies, the laptop dies. We can work around that a little bit. But, you know, the point is true, but it's... You know, to be honest, it's still not a reason not to do it, right? In terms of being able to say, you know, this might work or that might not work. It's a relatively minor thing considering the positive impact that we're going to have. So, you know, I say to people, yes, laptops will be stolen and we'll have horror stories of, you know, all sorts of bad things happening with it. But in the end, it's all about the positive effects, not necessarily the sum of the negative effects. Anybody else? Yeah. Yeah, so your question is sort of one for two deal and doing pen pals at the same time. That is actually the model that we've talked about, which is you're literally buying a laptop for one kid, and you're going to get one, and he's going to get one, and they're going to be connected. And you're going to be able to talk to that kid no matter where he is. So that is actually a model. I mean, it's both creepy and wonderful. right? You've got a benefactor. but I think that would be an interesting experience if not for the kids, but for the people who receive the laptops too. You're going to get a little insight into what it's like to really sort of scrounge for a living in a lot of the world and the sort of opportunities that we have that I think we really take for granted. Yes? Right. Yeah, for-profit companies aren't always a source of innovation. Mary Lou Jepsen, who is the woman pictured and who really drove the display design, she came from Intel. You know, she did a lot of their display work for a very long time. You know, Nicholas is good at attracting really interesting people and interesting ideas. You know, he worked in the Media Lab, MIT Media Lab, for a long time, which is, anybody here been to the Media Lab? A few people? It's a very strange place. in a good way. You know, they are people who actually care about technology at the same time they care about art. You know, they've got people there working on things like robots that are fuzzy that make you feel better, and they sit there and breathe, and you hold on to them if you're sick. It's a little strange. But at the same time, they allow people to express themselves. So it's a unique set of individuals, I think, that have learned to attract people who are thinking outside of the normal scope. You know, for the technology, you know, that screen's going to show up in our laptops at some point. You know, we get people in all the time salivating. It's like, we need that display. How can we get it? Like, well, we're busy right now. and the mesh networking is based on a Marvell chip. There's nothing really special there except for the fact that it's using an emerging mesh standard, and we're able to mix it with a laptop that gets deployed over an entire area, which makes a mesh valid. Right. So I think the innovations come from the need. Right. Oh, we need a display that works outside. Oh, we need mesh networking because there's no last mile. It's like, oh, okay, so we actually create these things, right? We do it based on need. We do it solving real-world problems. That's exactly why I said that there's only one innovation in this laptop, which is laptops for poor kids. Like, everything else serves that need. So. Hardware specifications for, I'm not sure exactly what your question is. Which specifications? At some point, we're going to make the designs available for the hardware so people can build it themselves. That, the answer to that question is yes, I believe, is our intent. The only part that is proprietary is still the firmware for the mesh wireless, which pisses us off to no end. But they were also the only person on the product on the market with a product that would do it. It's got, I'll take just a little detail, and how much time do I have? 5 minutes. The wireless is actually a separate CPU. It's a little ARM processor with 96K or 196K of memory. It handles all the routing. Nobody else had that, right? It actually runs a little operating system. And it'll run when the CPU is off, right? You can suspend your laptop and it's still routing packets. That's a huge deal. It means because when you close your laptop is still a router and it only pulls 300-400 watts or something, or not watts. Wow, that'd be a lot. Oh, I suck. I know. I get a groan for that one. I'm going to say milliamps, I think it is. But it's a very small draw, right? I mean, you can leave it on, leave it like that for several days, and you won't do so much damage. But that's a huge part of our story. That's the only part that's proprietary. Once again, it makes me sad, and we actually have a lot of problems with it. I probably won't make that. I'm not sure if it's a mistake or not, right? It's certainly a sacrifice. So, but it serves a greater need in this case. So, take a little bit. Wait, I saw a hand over here first.
Yes.
We do another beta in a couple weeks of the hardware and software. We're supposed to do, and then another month, a month and a half later, we have final hardware. It's right, the last chance to make changes, and in theory, we're going to start really building things in June and July. So that's basically what our timeline is. So up, two up behind you there. Same question?
When?
When can I buy one? 20 days later? No. On the black market. The answer to the question is both yes and no. Thank you. You are useful. The question was, is there a clear plan for how teachers will integrate this into their classrooms? And I said yes and no. The yes part of that question is that a lot of the countries who are concerned about that are interested in it. And the no part of that is a lot of these teachers have never seen a computer in their lives. Right, so they're going to be learning right along with the kids about what this means. Just like here, it's true.
So I can take one more question. Who's got a good one? Who said that? Val? Yes. Empathy is important. We have to admit we have feelings. Get in touch with your inner femininity. I'm actually being a little bit serious about that, right? We're all so strong and we're a mean culture and my God, the mailing of flame wars. Just listen for once, right? It's pretty easy. So I think that's about all the time I have. It's 10 o'clock. Do you have something you need to say? Oh, sweetie's gonna fill my time. I'll take one more, just cause for fun, because he looks very serious. Yeah, so the question is about supporting people with disabilities and vision in particular. The answer to the question is yes. We're certainly considering that. We're using GTK for a reason. That's one of the reasons. Our interface is, I actually suspect it's better for people who are visually impaired since there's not so many menus and there's not so many modes to jump through and it's hard to get lost. But it's certainly something we're going to have to work on and develop because we don't have a lot of the sort of glue that we need to be able to support it. But we will. We will. I think I'm about out of time here. So I'll turn it over to Jeff. Thank you very much.
Apparently it takes 3 switches before I get to, I can see it on my screen, you can see it on your screen, and it's actually the right size. Thank you very much, Chris. I actually have gifts for you, but I'll have to give them to you tomorrow. I can give you my laptop, no. We're actually going to be leaving here a little bit earlier than the catering people expect. Please do not make them crazy by turning up and expecting food straight away. They're expecting us at about 10:15, 10:30. So pull back a bit, maybe make cues or something, you know, productive. I just want to remind you that we have a Google party tonight. You do require photo ID to get in, particularly if you look young, especially if you're under 18. If you happen to have photo ID that shows that you're over 18, that would really help. I don't think that's what I was meant to say. Perhaps that came out wrong. Unfortunately, if you are under 18, you won't be able to get in. That's one of the licensing problems that we have here. One of the reasons why Melbourne can, in fact, be better than Sydney in some ways. Whoa. So to say something about Google as the host of the party tonight, I just wanted to show you something about the Google. I like to look up my ranch. the Google knows everything. So clearly, hello! Yeah! And not only that, but one of the chief inspirations for LCA 2007 was in fact 2004 Adelaide, so it knows which the best LCAs are. Additionally, because, you know, we're not just about Linux here. We're all about free software. We just call Linux because, you know, it has its awesome brand name. But hello! Yeah! So the Google knows where we are. So yeah, go to the Google party tonight. It'll be really fun. Rock on. Enjoy your LCA. Thank you.